Welcome to Press On Podcast with Mike Woodruff, where Mike and invited guests share insights to cultivate a biblical perspective and thoughtful resilience in challenging times.
Welcome back to the Press On Podcast. My name is Mike Woodruff, and today I have the privilege of talking to Cromwell. Cromwell Awidi, who is the executive director of International Needs Ghana. I'm in Ghana. I came here after Israel and came here for scholar leaders stuff and also to follow up on Christchurch's work here. I was supposed to be here a few years ago, COVID. I think that's all I have to say, COVID. And everybody knows, oh yes, all these things got delayed. So we have done a lot of investment in Ghana, almost all of it through International Needs. And Cromwell directs that ministry now. Delightful guy. And we have a sort of a wide-ranging interview. He has a delightful Ghanaian accent that I hope translates well on a podcast. And yeah, I would just say, if those of you who have thought about coming to Ghana on a Christchurch Ghana trip, should. It's a wonderful place. Let me just be clear. It's a hard place to be. Delightful. The people are delightful. The hospitality is delightful. I feel very safe, all of that. But it is, there's a lot of poverty in Ghana. And the work is hard. And it's also just emotionally, personally disruptive, some of which comes out just as you see the care of the work that's being done here. You see the magnitude of the work that's being done here. It can make other efforts seem uniquely small. So anyway, I hope you enjoy the interview. Thanks. I'm excited today to have a chance to chat with Cromwell Awidi, who we are sitting in the cafeteria, the guest house for International Needs Ghana. This is out in at a Adome, and we've been here for a few days. International Needs is a 30-year-old worldwide partnership of Christian organizations focused on fulfilling the commission of Jesus by transforming lives, families, and communities through partnerships guided by God's love and a commitment to holistic development. And I'm having a chance to see all of that. IN focuses on children, women, education, health, and Christian witness. And Cromwell leads 30 office workers out of their office in Accra, and then another 150 field in, or 150 staff in the field. And we met 15 years ago. I was out here. IN and Christchurch already had a partnership that was in place. It preceded us, based on Walter Pimpong and some of the time he spent at Trinity. We met, Cromwell and I met about 12 years ago when we were ramping up our work, I guess maybe just starting the work in the village of Kuve, where the strategy, and we'll chat about this, but the strategy was to sort of disempower some of the dark forces. The Turkosi program had ostensibly witch doctors that were wreaking havoc, and especially sort of demanding payment in young women, and all of that was bad. And IN had a plan to sort of disempower that through education and through the gospel and through water and through a church and through all those kinds of things. So at the time, Edmund Vanderpuy, who moved from being the general secretary or executive director of IN Ghana to being the general secretary, leader, president of IN globally. At the time, Edmund was in charge of Ghana, and Cromwell and I met when he was helping to bring water out to Kuve. And it was this fascinating project. There was an engineer from Christchurch that was with me, and he could not believe that that you guys were running pipe with shovels and a level and running pipe for a mile, maybe a mile and a half. I can't remember. But that, so an engineering feat, not rivaled since the Roman aqueducts, but you guys pulled it off. And since then, we've expanded our partnership. Christ Church has been thrilled to partner with the international needs in a variety of different ways. Again, the big investment in Cuvée. And then with Reach, we were involved in planting two churches, which I have not yet seen. I'm going to visit one tomorrow and preach a different one on Sunday. But I was traveling around with Cromwell. We were over at a school that we have made some investments in. They have training programs for women, young women. I spoke at a little devotional this morning. I guess there's 150 young women there.
148.
And Christ Church was involved. They have three different programs in place right now. One is hospitality, focusing on food and the hospitality industry. A second one is focusing on fashion and sewing clothes. And then a third is, I can't remember. What's the third?
Hospitality.
I said hospitality. So
cosmetology.
Cosmetology. So yes, the first time I was here, I got my hair cut by some of the women in that program. That ceased. I showed up without my haircut, thinking that I'd get my hair cut this time, but that doesn't happen. So anyway, Christ Church was involved in buying some industrial sewing machines there for their training purposes and also putting in some bathrooms in their dorms and some other things. And it was fun to see that. And some of you, those of you who have been at Christ Church, may remember that Edmund Vandenberg preached at Christ Church sometime this past year. We also had some women from IN that were at Christ Church. Yes, Mercy and Patience. Was it Patience?
Comfort
and Mercy. Yes. How could I forget that? So anyway, I am looking forward to having a conversation with you, Cromwell. And let me just start by asking how you're doing. How's your family? How are you? You've got a lot on your shoulders. How was life?
Well, life, by the grace of God, life is treating us well. And I'm doing well by the grace of God. My family is also fine. My wife and my four children. My big girl is back from school for some medical checkups before going back. She's in grade 12. And then the younger one, the second one, is in school, grade 10. And so he's in the boarding house. So the 13-year-old girl and the 8-year-old boy, they are home with us in school. And we are doing fine by the grace of God.
Good. Well, I bring greetings from lots of people at Christ Church. You're sort of you've entered that rare stratosphere where only one name is needed. Cromwell is like Cher or Tiger or Ringo, or, you know exactly who people are talking about. Bono, you're Cromwell. People know Cromwell. By the way, were you named for the British statesman?
I should guess so.
Okay.
I guess so. My mom told me I had a different name, but a gentleman bearing that name was a total drunken. She didn't want that for the son, so okay. She changed the name to Cromwell.
Okay, well, it has served you well. So let's talk about Ghana for a couple minutes. West African nation, former British colony. The first African nation that was colonized, sort of breakaway from the Brits back in the late 1950s, changed its name from the Gold Coast at the time to the Republic of Ghana, population 33 million, lots of natural resources, including gold, which, by the way, you've not shared with me. So you guys are remarkably hospitable and just so warm and gracious. And there's so much about Ghana that I like. But You've held out on the gold and you've held out on the coffee. You know, I think Starbucks bought all your good coffee. So anyway, it's a young country and it certainly feels that way. I looked it up. In preparation for our time, I looked up the average age in Ghana is 29.1. The average age in the United States is 38.5. And the U.S. is birth rate. There's 1.7 children per woman over the age, I think, of 16 in the U.S. And there are 3.8 children per Ghanaian woman. By the way, when I went to Wikipedia to look this up, I had to wade through, and I think this is the first time, because I checked Wikipedia, or the CIA also has a write-up on countries and gives you all this information. For the first time, all the information I was getting was on, like, how much carbon dioxide you emit and how much electricity you use, all these climate change metrics. So anyway, young country, and I see lots of young kids, lots of young women that are pregnant. And I've been here for a few days before I got with you, and so Ghana has some sort of a marker or a placeholder as the location where Africans were loaded onto slave ships 500 years ago, and so I visited some of those. That said, it's politically stable, and yeah, you said that there were some economic challenges last year, but Ghana always strikes me as a place I can relax. And I don't feel that in some other African country. I've gone for runs here without thinking twice about safety. I would never go for a run in Nigeria. I don't know that I'd go for a run in Kenya, but Ghana is... I feel very safe. So you guys you've got things working for you. So what's work? Why are you guys so nice? How has your country got the stability that it has?
Well, Ghana is seen as a stable country. We are a democracy. We've had some instability in government in the past, but since 1992, we've changed governments only through the ballot boxes. And that has also helped us in terms of our transitions. Then we have a very strong and robust traditional system that is able to soak some of the tensions, you know, through a peace engagement processes, bringing this, you know, elderly ones who control tradition and culture into the free marrying political space with the traditional space and the religious space. So those who command the moral highs, the traditional heritage and then practice, bringing all together, they're able to call people to order and
That's interesting because I mean, it's sort of a bit of a cliche in the States to say that culture in the U.S. is set by the young and that the old people want to be young. But you're saying the older people in Ghana are respected, and in that traditional sense, they're able to help bring some stability.
They're the custodians of culture and tradition. The old folks have lost it. The young folks have lost it. We have been westernized, let me put it that way. And then our institutions are a bit slow. The formal institutions, the courts are a bit slow in resolving issues. So that space is created for the informal sector to step in and make good impacts. We even have a formalized National Peace Council. You know, with eminent people on board.
And that includes, so a National Peace Council includes the traditional leaders, the chiefs.
The imams, the sheikhs, the reverend ministers, the bishops, they all brought together and some eminent people.
So I was with a Nigerian church leader earlier in the week in Ghana. I was here in Ghana, but he was in Ghana. And he's doing, and there's a lot of interplay in the scholarly world between Christianity and Islam. And in Nigeria, that seems to be a real flashpoint. But I pick up here that Christian leaders and Muslim leaders are working together or are protecting each other. I mean, I don't want to go too far here, but I don't sense that tension.
Well, we do not really have serious religious tensions here in Ghana. No, we work together on social issues. You practice your religion, I practice my religion. And of course, if you try winning a Muslim, you will get some pushback.
So if you're trying to see a Muslim come to faith, there's pushback.
You get some pushback, but you will not be attacked. There may be persecution. There is likely to be persecution for the new convert. Yeah. But if you decimate, you know, what is considered sacred in Islam, you may be attacked.
So if you burn the Quran, you would be attacked. That's not going to happen.
It's not likely to happen.
And the person who converts, so a Muslim who comes to faith in Christ, is going to be persecuted by the family.
Yes, by the family.
Will that
suffer rejection? In the main, you suffer rejection. Any other social pressure that will make you cave in and come back, you capitulate and then retrace your steps.
So does that ever go away? I mean, do they ever accept a Muslim son or daughter or brother or sister or child as a Christian?
Oh, yes, they do. There are quite a number of pastors who have Muslim backgrounds. They were pushed and pushed, but they persisted. And there are quite a number of Christians, very many, who have Muslim backgrounds.
Okay. So let's talk about something that you spend a lot of time on, in part because it's not working well, and that's education. So you have literacy rates. Well, you have an illiteracy rate of about 25%, 20 to 25%. I saw both numbers. The U.S., I think it was 88% literate. Canada is down as being 99% literate. Now, I don't know what other African countries are, but a 75% literacy rate is obviously holding some things back. Now, you have a bunch of languages. I'm assuming literacy means literacy in any, if you're illiterate in one language, you're literate. And English is your second language, right? You speak three languages?
Yes, I speak three.
So a tribal...
I do well with a fourth one. It's not too...
Okay. Well, we're going to keep this in English, just for the record. So let's talk about what IN is doing in education. I was at a school this morning. I was at a school yesterday. I was at two schools yesterday. These are IN schools. In one case, a school we helped, Christ Church helped build, that is now a government school, but with IN sort of oversight, management. There's the teachers are being paid for by the government, but IN is bringing the gospel. And there's medical care and other things through that. Schools are a big part of your work. Talk about that.
Yes, schools are a big part of our work. The IN family globally, we have a flagship program called International Needs Assistance Program. And this assistance program raises sponsorship, which becomes the vehicle that drives the promotion of education in our various countries.
So you're sponsoring a student, or you're sponsoring a teacher, or you're sponsoring a school. What are you sponsoring? You're
sponsoring a teacher in some cases, you're sponsoring students in some cases, you're sponsoring children and students in higher education. So we have International Needs Child Assistance Program, which focuses on children, sponsoring the children within the school environment. Of course, the little assistance goes to create a conducive environment within the school for these children to thrive. Then we have the INSAP, Students Assistance Program, that goes from grade 12, medical school sponsorship, nursing. So this goes into professional fields and teachers. In Ghana, for instance, we have about 7 medical doctors who are supported, and they are part of our medical team that provides medical care to communities every year. In terms of education,
So seven or eight doctors that are part of, they're on your staff, or they were students that have gone to medical school and are volunteering? What?
They are full-fledged credentialed medical doctors working in government facilities, in private facilities, but they volunteer their service. That's the condition for the sponsorship.
Okay.
To support community, rural communities where we work in with their know-how.
Okay. And I saw that today at the school that we visited, there was a nurse, and she was a government nurse. Is that right?
Yes. So we liaised with the government of Ghana through the Ghana Health Service to give us someone who can take care of the 140 plus girls and then the staff here, you know, handling emergency cases at the center. So they magnanimously gave us one nurse who work here 2 days in a week, and then 3 days at the other facility of the government.
Okay. So, by the way, the girls, we should say, the young women at this school, initially, I think when I was here 10 years ago, for the first time, there was a half dozen, maybe 15 or 20. Some of them had, the program started with these girls that were being taken out of Tricosi, I think, but it's massively expanded from there. And their ages 15 to 28. So at the schools, so back to the school. So at the schools, there's medical care support, there's meals,
yes,
that are provided, and then education. So kindergarten, you call it KG, I think.
Yes, kindergarten to grade 12.
To grade 12. And then you've also got these sponsorships for medical doctors and nurses.
And then students in the university.
Okay.
Colleges of education.
How many students would you say IN has enrolled in either of, in any of the programs that you're helping right now?
Well, in the schools that we work in, IN built 11 schools, okay, in communities where there were no schools. And then we went into partnership with the government of Ghana with 8 of them. The 9th one is a full-fledged public school. So we are maintaining 2. When you pull all these schools together, we have over 5,700 children.
Okay.
Out of that 5,700 children, child sponsorship brings in support for a little over 1,600. So it's a mixed,
yep,
system we run.
And what does sponsorship cost? How much does it cost to sponsor a kid, a child?
I think in the U.S., I think it's about $40. I need to check.
$40 a month.
I think it's about that.
Okay. So let's pivot for a minute and talk about the church in Ghana. So 75% higher, perhaps, of the church, or of the population, identify as Christian.
Yes.
Another 18%, 20% identify as Muslims. And then I'm guessing whatever's remaining is traditional African religion or?
And non-religion.
And non-religion. Okay. So that's a big number in the church. How is the church?
Well, the church in Ghana is picture of the church universal as we see now. We have the upsurge in charismatism and Pentecostalism. We have a strong evangelical faith practitioners And then we have a strong Catholic church also. Then, of course, a new group that's prophetic. It's also gaining a lot of traction in Ghana. A lot of people are trooping there. And then, of course, some of them who are quote and unquote charlatans are also out there. So it's a whole mixed, you know, group. But in the main, we have the Pentecostals and Charismatics outnumbering the Evangelicals and then the Catholics.
So the arm of the church that's growing is Charismatic, Pentecostal, and trouble. I'm not saying Charismatic and Pentecostal are trouble, but you're talking about false teachers and the charlatans and the,
Also another group.
And so you have a very, very focused, holistic mission. So Christian witness. So you want to see people come to faith, but you also are providing education, you're providing medical care, you're providing food and running water and whatever else, clean water. So are others, do you see a lot of that?
Yes, we do. We believe, you know, in our work with children, Jesus Christ grew in wisdom, in stature, and in the fear of God, the holistic development of the child. So we provided education in a community where there's no water, in a community where the child is not serious, rampant or high incidence of child abuse, violence against children and neglect of children. We are in a community where we are providing education. The health status of the people is nothing to write home about. We are in a community where there are no churches and yet we want to do education. So we pull all these together, send the gospel to areas that are not well served with the gospel, where we can extend potable water to the community, where possible, work with the communities to make the environment safe for children survivors, and then we thrive in these communities. Alongside that, we also work hard to ensure that the dividend from education that we are offering is qualitative and can run them through to the highest level if they are willing to proceed further.
I know I saw your billboard about
child marriage.
About child marriage, yes. So in the States, when we talk about children's rights, it's a different topic these days. But talking about child labor, you're protecting children from unfair labor practices. You're protecting young girls from being child brides.
Yes.
You're working on education. You're working on, again, health and nutrition and
trafficking of children.
And then, stopping sexual trafficking of children. Is that a big problem in Ghana? What are the numbers? Do you have numbers of the number of children or women, I guess, either category, if we divide it, however that gets divided, of people that are being trafficked, sexually trafficked in Ghana?
Well, I don't have the numbers on sexually trafficked children and women, but it's a growing area. The new frontiers have emerged. That's the Gulf region where they take the kafala system is practiced. Women, young ladies go there to work as house helps, and they go through a lot of maltreatment, a lot of abuse, and they return and they have to be reintegrated. You know, then we have child trafficking in-house in Ghana or within country along the Volta Lake. When the river was dammed, the lake that formed behind it created an opportunity for fishing in a forest zone, forested area where they didn't have the skill, the know-how for fishing. And it changed the chemistry of the water behind the, below the dam. So the livestock was truncated. Let me put it that way. So opportunity created. So they moved, they migrated in droves. Now we have second, third, fourth generation. The fishery stock has been depleted. So labor substitution must happen. Children are now being taken there because you don't need to pay the child. It's a form of exploitation. Mm. So that's the kind of thing that is happening. Then the child marriage, the issue of child marriage, the percentages are scaring because the law says that you must not marry before you turn 18. So any marriage below 18 is considered in Ghana child marriage. So we are talking about 18% of people 45 years and above being married before the age of 18.
So 18% of people over the age of 45 were married before they were
21.
Okay. Well, so I feel, I mean, if an 18 and a 17-year-old get married, I feel very differently about that than if a 45-year-old and a 12-year-old get married. And I'm assuming that the focus and the problem is the second, not the first. I mean,
it's the second.
Yes.
Yes. Below 18, the survey looked at women 45 years and below and found out that within that cohort,
okay,
that percentage, almost 21%, were married before they turned 18.
Okay. Well, let me pivot here. I want to ask you, as I said, you have a lot of fans at Christ Church. And I have enjoyed the few days that we've been together, and we're, you know, I get to watch you interact with your staff, and obviously a big staff, 30 in your office, we said 150 on the field. So
115.
Oh, 115. Okay. So 150 staff total,
yes.
115 in the field, 30 in the office. So there's several things about you that I just want to say. I see this in you, and I really want to affirm it. You see people and situations well. You observe what's going around on in ways that make me jealous. And you are investing in these young people. Last night, I after dinner, I pulled up with a book, and it's not lost on me that you were hanging out with the young, some of your young people. I think you called them your kingmakers. So you're three of your five direct reports. You obviously don't get lots of time with them because you're all traveling, but you were with them for several hours.
Yeah.
And so you are, and I watched you talking with kitchen staff, and I've watched you talking to the, you know, the students, and I've watched you also bring joy. When we were at Cuvée, you danced in with the young people that were dancing in to the village. You bring a lot of, you're perceptive, and you're bringing a lot of energy and joy. The thing I think most people would say about you, though, Cromwell, is that you are the non-anxious presence. You are the person who brings a sense of calm, sense of stability. I know it's not because your job is easy or because everything's going right. The poverty, which we'll talk about in a minute, is crushing, and there's challenges on so many fronts. And yet you just bring a real sense of peace and a sense of hope and a sense of trust. So my question, I guess, is that your personality, or is that, you think, a gifting from the Holy Spirit, or is that something that you have learned to work on? So I add this third because there's a basketball, he's no longer a coach, Brad Stevens. He was a coach for a college team, Butler, and they did, that's when I first started noticing him, because, you know, the chaos of the final, you know, of our big basketball season, and there's so, everybody's just screaming and yelling, and he was just completely calm. And then he's moved on. He went into pros, and now he's out of coaching. But I read an interview with him where he said, I was very excited and very excitable, and I realized that that didn't help my players. So he goes, I've decided to be calm. So you bring that non-anxious presence. Is that just who you are? Is that the Holy Spirit? Or did you say, I need to do this in order to lead this organization?
Well, I think it's a combination of all.
I was going to tell you that's not an acceptable answer, but I figured you'd go there.
I believe that God gives grace, you know, and that grace enables you to do things, let me put it, quote and unquote, so fluidly and easily, and we call it grace. And God gives it to you if you are doing something and he's called you into. It comes as gifts and it comes as graces. And then also my personal philosophy is that ministry is about people. Development is about people. It's not about objects, it's not about things, it's about people. And within IN, our philosophy is about people, transforming lives. So any life you encounter is a life that is valuable and that you must do something to transform. So I think doing it over time, it has become a part of me, and that grace keeps increasing on me. That's how I sense it. So I don't go out there to look at objects and look at structures, but I look at people within that context. How can we carry them along in the ministry? And how can we carry them along as we do community development work? So they shoot out from poverty and shoot out from inequality, shoot out from all the debilitating issues and the vulnerabilities, and build resilient communities. So that is it.
Well, I appreciate that. And I guess I want to underline for those who are not here, those who are listening that have not been to Ghana. This is a country with a lot of challenges. So right now, I've not read. I'm aware that you're getting bad press, in at least in the U.S. media, over the proposed legislation around LGBTQ issues. I've not had a chance to read any of the articles. I don't necessarily trust the press to give me this very clearly. And so I'd want to read the legislation, but you said that you don't think it's going to get signed by the president. It feels to me, from what I think I've heard, it's a little heavy-handed, but you've got social political issues going on. Then a year ago, you told me that your economy hit a real crisis point and the IMF had to step in to stabilize the currency, and things are stable now, but you've got, it's 3 to 4 years of working your way out of a real deep hole that you're in. So there's obvious poverty. And you know, the road we drove down to get to Kuwait helped me just think again about poverty. Poverty is hard, but the poverty of a country means that infrastructure is not necessarily there. And so people will not believe, I don't know, that road was 10 miles that we were on and it was an hour and a half. I've been in bad roads. Like in Nigeria, they got bad roads and they got potholes, but they not only have potholes, they just got tons of traffic. And it can take, you know, an hour to go 3 miles. This took an hour and a half. There was no traffic. I mean, we saw a couple of motorcycles. It's not a road. I mean, it's a road, but it is washed out and there's gullies. And that just adds hours to anything. And it would be one thing if we're just going to just a tiny little village where 30 people live, but there's thousands of people.
17-kilometer stretch of road.
17-kilometer stretch. So that's 10, 11 miles.
Yeah.
And tens of thousands of people use this road, need this road. And so it was jarring. So you've got the infrastructure that's not developed. You've got life expectancy, 64 for men, 66 for women. US, it's closer to 80. In Canada, it's over 80. Gross national income, the US is listed, this is 2021 numbers, 57,000 in the US. In Ghana, 2,200. Now, those are hard numbers to equate, and obviously the cost of living is much lower, and I'm not sure what the economists are doing when they give those numbers, but significant poverty. And then good, healthy relationships with Islam, but I do pick up occasionally that there's some tension there. There's challenges in Ghana, doing work in Ghana, and yet you bring that non-anxious presence, and you said the grace of God, the gifting of the Spirit, your commitment to people. I mean, I want to emphasize that's in the face of real challenges.
Oh yes, yes, there are numerous challenges that we encounter. For instance, the trip we did yesterday is going to wear you out if you have to travel on that road. And when you get into
it, it was a good ab workout. That's what I was. Yeah. I was just amazed at how being, I mean, not jarred, but it was a workout being in that vehicle.
Yes, you are in a vehicle, an SUV, but you feel worn out.
Yes,
and then when you're working in the community, you're thinking about your return journey.
Yeah.
We are praying that it should not rain to worsen an already bad situation. You have a people, some who have lost agency. You have to recreate in them agency for any and everything. You have to pep them up, you know, to see some hope in the education of their children, because there's high unemployment rate. Some have finished who have no job. You have to reassure them that agricultural inputs, which have become very expensive, they can still farm and make something out of it. So this is a population in some instances who have given up. So you need to recreate that hope in them. And so that is our work, and we keep talking to them. Let that young girl in the community believe that she can go through school, get to university, finish, and also get married in a normal way, either customarily or by ordinance. She should not just throw in the towel. After all, it's going to end up in marriage. So if I take it now and forgo school, no. So our work pushes all those frontiers, recreating them the agents that they are capable of doing something themselves. You shouldn't sell out anything cheap. It's kind of exciting. And of course, when you have the cultural drumming and dancing, it puts all of us in excitement mood. And when you fraternize with them, it cements the relationship.
Mm. Yeah. I'm really, really hoping that there was no video footage of me dancing in that parade.
I hope so.
Well, hope so. It might get lost on my trip across the Atlantic. I was in fear as soon as I saw everybody dancing coming in. I thought, oh, Cromwell's going to try and get me out there, and it's not going to be anything I can say no to. Okay, so the final five questions here. And these are just the quick answers to these last five questions. What, if anything, keeps you up at night? Are you worried about something? Anything? What, if anything, keeps you up at night?
Well, I wake up virtually every day at around 4 a.m. processing so many things about the work. I spend my time praying and processing virtually every part of the work, you know, and I get inspired in those moments also. I won't call it anxious moments, no, but I'm processing a lot of things, but this thing needs to be done. We need to do it this way. Okay, now let me talk to this guy. Let me look at this way. Let me look at it that way, you know. So I spend that time processing. I spend that time for my devotion. And up to about 6 a.m., I spend prayer,
right,
devotion.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. So just in the event that you're... in the event that those of us that don't share your Ghanaian accent didn't pick that up, or we have an accent here in your King's English, I think is what you would claim.
It is always a challenge.
Yes.
When we speak, our accents blur what we want to say.
Yeah.
We pronounce things differently. Our kids are doing better. And then we have to listen attentively to hear you sometimes when you speak.
Right, right. Well, it's right. So
accept that.
I'm not surprised, one, that you said you got up at 4 a.m., or two, that you said you had a couple hours of devotional reflection, prayer,
yeah,
allowing to sort of start the day in a sense of hope and in the presence of God. So, great example there. Second question. Where are you finding hope? Tell any story you want to tell about something IN is doing or something that just brought to you encouragement.
Encouragement, one, from the Word of God, and two, from the results of the work we've done. They give me joy. I go to Philippians 4:13. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. So I find myself in that rugged terrain and I'm almost stuck in the middle of slippery road. And I'm like, well, I can still do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And he provided some people to come to our aid. Those are the things that give us encouragement. Then we meet, yesterday we were in a school. One teacher walks to me and say, you have forgotten me. You know me. I know you. I was in the school. And this is somebody we picked as a child. I even forgot about her.
Hmm.
And she's reminding me, you picked us as a child. Today I am here teaching other children. You see them, it gives you joy. I've seen people who couldn't have gone to medical school, but through our support, they are medical practitioners. They are surgeons.
Hmm.
And they are all over the place. You meet them and it's so refreshing.
Good.
Then you see the fruits of your labor and then you want to press on.
Good. What are you reading?
Well, the current book I'm reading is "What God Cannot Do, What He Cannot Do in Heaven." It's on evangelism.
Hmm.
I can't remember the name of the author. I don't have it off mind.
I saw that book. You were carrying it.
Right.
The One Thing You Can't Do in Heaven. And it's evangelism. So, okay. Because you have leadership responsibilities in your church. You're working in campus ministry,
yes,
the Assemblies of God. And so you have,
yes,
outreach work that you're doing
so
outside of IN.
That's true. I am a member of the Assemblies of God Church, one of the credential, pastor's credential by Assemblies of God. And I manage, on behalf of the church, the campus ministry. It's called Assemblies of God Campus Ministry. So in the various universities, colleges, and then high schools, we have ministries there that work with several teams. I coordinate several teams to disciple young people, disciple the intellectual stock within the church whilst they are on campus. When they come home, they belong to their churches, their local church chapters.
Right.
But when they are on campus, we rally them, make sure they remain in the faith, they grow in the Lord. So that's my way.
Is there a book or a movie or a podcast or something that you have been recommending to people?
Well, I saw a book. I have not finished reading it. I just read a small portion and then I lost it. It wasn't mine, but how to work with the Generation Z.
Oh, okay.
Because these are the people we are employing now. These are the people on the campuses. Understanding them, I do a lot of reading on them, but that's online. Okay. I did see a book in the U.S. I flipped through, got a few things in.
Well, let me say, those of us in the U.S. do not know how to work with Generation Z. So if the book was from the U.S., I was excited. I thought it was from Ghana. Maybe I'd buy a copy.
It's a difficult area for all of us.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, last question. What's your next project? What are you working on? What's on the horizon? What do you hope to get started? A lot of times I'm asked, I'm speaking to authors, they're talking about their next book, but maybe this is the next project that Ian is going to pick up. Or
the next set of projects, I'm looking to design an outreach project that will take the gospel to other unreached areas.
Okay.
And then also seeking to develop a model for young people that brings them to the IT space and take them as a captive group within communities and give them the word of God, design the discipleship projects, programs for them that will run alongside the whole IT, you know, learning process. So what excites them brings them together. And we give them the gospel.
Okay.
And then working on ending child trafficking and child labor. Mm-hmm. Some of them. The last one is a Bible project to procure Bibles for schools. We just coming out of distribution of 10,000 pieces of Bible to school children. Mm-hmm. We staggered it over many years. When we got it, the first distribution, we did it around the whole schools. Then every year we go around those who go to grade four, where they can read. But the lesson I have learned is to also get children's Bible, so we don't need to wait till they get to grade four before they start reading some kind of Bible.
Sure.
That's also...
Right. Well, those are three very big, noble projects. One, to try and mobilize young people on college's campuses for evangelism. Secondly, to end child labor and child sex trafficking. And then third, to get the Bible distributed to people. So thank you for that work, Cromwell.
Thank you.
Good to be with you always. And thanks for your energy, your joy, your work. May the Lord's blessing be upon you. And we're done. Thank you.
Thank you for all the support. Thank you to Christchurch. Thank you to you as a person, to Sharon and all the key people I've met in Chicago, very friendly people. Thank you and God bless you. You are part of this results that we are seeing.